Welcome to the Model Railroader, your ultimate destination for all things railroading. From trains.com, we bring you step-by-step modeling and construction projects, insightful reviews, tips from the experts, and more. This program is proudly presented by Aftersight, a community hub for audio news, entertainment, and resources. Find us at aftersight.org. This program is intended to be used solely by individuals who are blind or have low vision. All aboard!
Thank you for joining us for the Model Railroader magazine, read by Jason Consul. Today we will be reading the following articles: Step by Step, Painting Figurines Made Easy, and Turning Back Time on the W&LE. The first article is Step by Step, Upgrade a Modern Passenger Car, by George Vesley. When I attended TrainFest 2022 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, I saw a Kato HO scale General Electric P42 diesel locomotive in Amtrak's Midnight Blue Scheme with the passenger carrier's 50th anniversary herald. It was such a nice-looking engine that I purchased one from my favorite hobby shop when I returned home. Similar to other Kato engines, the P42 ran very smoothly. I discovered the model didn't have a drive system similar to other engines in my collection. Instead, each truck has a coreless motor with a flywheel. Since I had the engine, I needed some Amtrak passenger cars to go with it. I purchased several Kato Superliner passenger cars in various body styles and a Bachmann Budd 85-foot full-dome car to complete my train. Follow along as I share how I upgraded these cars to my railroad's specification. George Vesley has been running trains since his grandfather gave him a Lionel train for Christmas in 1940. He is an organic chemist who retired from a career as a college professor and corporate scientist for 3M. This is his first feature in Model Railroader. Step 1. New Couplers. To be consistent with my other rolling stock, I added KD couplers to my new passenger cars. Because of the length of the cars, I didn't want to attach the couplers to the body. Therefore, I needed to make a coupler extension bar. I made the extension bar by cutting a piece of 3/64-inch thick styrene, about 3/8-inch by 1 7/8-inch. I then drilled a 3/16-inch hole centered 3/16 of an inch from the end of the bar. The styrene I had was white, so I spray painted it black. Then I glued a KD draft gear box on the end opposite the hole. When the glue dried, I drilled a 1/16-inch hole in the middle of the draft gear box and tapped it with a 2-56 tap. I completed each installation with a KD number 5 coupler, a draft gearbox cover, and a 2-56 by 3/16-inch machine screw. I removed the truck from the car and placed the extension bar on the body bolster used to mount the truck with the coupler box on the bottom. If needed, the height of the coupler can be adjusted by adding a washer. The finished installation is shown in Picture 2. This is a simple and inexpensive way to add KD couplers to long passenger cars. Step 2. Light it up. After upgrading the couplers, I wanted to add interior lighting and end marker lights to the cars. To do this, I used light-emitting diode, or LED strips, sold for under-the-counter lights. I purchased a 16-foot strip of Valaine 12-volt DC LEDs, parentheses 300 LEDs, SMD5050, close parentheses, from Amazon. There are enough LEDs to complete several cars. I cut a strip of LEDs to the length of the car, which worked out to 15 LEDs. I then removed the coating on the end to expose the copper leads and soldered a wire to each copper terminal. Then I applied liquid tape to the solder wires to insulate and further secure the attachment. Next, I removed the body of the Kato Superliner and the upper floorboard containing the passenger seats and the marker light lenses from one end. The LED strips have 3M pressure-sensitive adhesive on the back, so it was easy to attach the strips to the inside top of the car. I then assembled a small bridge rectifier and voltage regulator, parentheses 12 volts DC, close parentheses, circuit to keep the voltage at or below 12 volts DC. This also ensured the lights would operate regardless of the car's direction. I assembled the marker light LEDs by connecting the positive leads of two 1/8-inch red LEDs to a 1K resistor. I lengthened the negative leads with additional wire, covering the connection with heat shrink tubing to prevent a short circuit. Then I removed the lower floor from the chassis holding the trucks. Since the Kato cars have electrical pickup in the trucks, I was able to tap into that system. I did this by drilling a 1/4-inch hole in the floor opposite the vertical copper strips connected to the electrical pickups on the trucks. I soldered a wire to each copper strip and threaded them through the holes. I then put the floorboard back on the chassis. I drilled 2 1/8-inch holes in the end of the car to add red LED marker lights. The LEDs were secured with a drop of cyanoacrylate adhesive. Make sure the LEDs are even with the outside of the car body. The LED wires were then bent down at a right angle. I made a notch with a cutoff tool in both corners on one end of the upper floorboard to accommodate the wires of the marker light LEDs. Then I reinstalled the upper floorboard. I soldered the wires from the marker light LEDs and the LED strip to the outputs of the bridge rectifier voltage regulator circuit. I insulated the connections with heat shrink tubing. Make sure you connect the wires with the correct polarity. Then I soldered the wires from the copper input strip to the input of the bridge rectifier. You may have to cut a slit in the vertical support to accommodate the wires. Finally, I placed the car body back on the model. The next article is Painting Figures Made Easy. Stretch your budget by painting figures yourself. By V.S. Roseman. Photos by the author. When I built my first serious HO train layout at 13 years old, my priority for my limited budget was buying track, locomotives, and rolling stock. Once in a while, I would purchase a structure kit or materials to build one. The scenery was mostly made from things I could salvage around the house. Figures weren't even on my list. One day, my cousin Florence came for a visit and surprised me with a bag full of HO scale figures. We set them on my layout, and I was surprised to see how the model railroad came to life. I've never forgotten her kindness or how much of an effect figures can have on a model railroad. Today, there are thousands of factory-painted figures available in a variety of useful poses and most popular modeling scales. The cost of painted figures mounts up quickly, however. Fortunately, manufacturers such as Pricer and William K. Walthers Incorporated, among others, offer bulk packs of unpainted figures at a far lower price point. Many modelers are hesitant to paint their own figures. At first glance, the tiny size of the details may seem daunting. In my experience as an instructor of fine arts in the New York City school system for 30 years, I can say that most modelers need only a little practice to develop the necessary skills. Although I've worked on numerous figures, I often go months between painting sessions. As a result, when I begin, my skills are rusty and the initial figures aren't good enough to use. Fortunately, the quality improves as I continue working. After I've painted a batch of figures, I use a compatible thinner to clean off any that didn't turn out like I'd hoped. Then I repaint them. My results are usually better the second time. Getting started. The injection molding process used on plastic figures leaves a mold release residue. Paint will not adhere well to the plastic until it's removed. Before painting, dip figures into warm water with a few drops of ivory liquid dish soap added and gently scrub them with a soft toothbrush. Editor's note, avoid soaps with moisturizers. Then rinse and dry the castings. When painting figures, I like to start with the skin. Complexions can range from pale peach to dark mahogany or anywhere in between. Unlike blending colors to accurately match your favorite railroad's paint scheme, creating skin colors for figures doesn't have to be an exact science. I begin with light colors and work toward darker tones with a few drops at a time. I use an artist's compartment tray, which I line with aluminum foil, as shown at middle right, for mixing colors. Light skin is variations of a pale peach color, parentheses, orange and white, close parentheses. The flesh color offered by most hobby paint manufacturers is a reasonable starting point. Apply the paint over the face, neck, hands, and any other areas skin would show. Then, add a few drops of brown to the color in the mixing tray and paint a few more figures. If the color is too dark, add white or flesh color to lighten it. Continue painting, darkening the skin color after every few figures. When I complete a batch, I set the figures aside to dry. I leave figures on their sprues for painting and cut them off after the last paint is dry. If you cut them off to paint them, hold the figures with tweezers to avoid getting skin oils on their surfaces. Colors for clothing. Clothing will usually cover the upper body or torso, and most or all of the legs, unless a figure is wearing shorts, a skirt, or a bathing suit. I like to refer to color photos showing people in the area and time period I'm modeling, but you can pick any colors you like. If you are modeling an era before color photography was developed, you could refer to paintings to help you choose colors. Begin with pants and skirts, or start with shirts, blouses, and jackets as you prefer. I start with white clothing, then I mix in a little color to make tints such as sky blue, cream using yellow, pink, mix in red, or tan, mix in brown. For most figures, use contrasting colors such as dark blue pants and a pale yellow jacket or a red skirt with a pink blouse until all the figures are clothed. If you're modeling spring or summer on your model railroad, people usually wear brighter colors than in winter. During the cold months, the clothing color palette often includes more muted colors, earth tones, gray, and black. Add shoes carefully with a small brush or applicator. Men's dress shoes are usually black or brown, while ladies' shoes can be any color that goes with their outfit. Sneakers or tennis shoes can be white or any color you like. Check photos from your era for what colors were popular at the time. Painting hair requires a bit more care and can be done to finish off the figures. Blonde hair varies from platinum blonde, yellow with white added, to dirty blonde, yellow with a drop of brown, or ash blonde, yellow with a drop of gray. Red hair isn't actually red, but brown with red mixed into it. For dark brown hair, start with brown and mix in dark gray or black. Painting hair solid black may look too dark, so add a drop of brown to lighten it slightly. Gray hair can be made by adding white to black, depending on how light you choose to make it. Of course, white hair is white. Once the paint is thoroughly dry, parentheses 24 hours or until there is no discernible paint odor, close parentheses, I carefully snip the figures off their sprues with tweezer-style cutters. Then I line up all the figures in order of success, beginning with the best ones. Any that don't meet expectations are cleaned and repainted. Imperfect, but still usable. What do you do if none of your figures turned out all that great? Set them aside at least overnight. They may look better to you after you've given your eyes some time to rest. Also, consider that the figures on a model railroad don't all need to have factory-perfect paint jobs. Any less-than-perfect figures can be placed farther from the viewing edge of the layout, in shady doorways, under platform canopies, or other locations where they are harder to see. Passenger car and building interiors are also good places to put figures with subpar paint jobs. When placing people in large groups, such as waiting for a train on the station platform, set the ones with the best paint jobs around the edge of the crowd where they'll be easier for visitors and operators to appreciate. Any figures with minor paint imperfections can be placed inside of the group where they won't stand out as much. In addition, you could mix in some factory-painted figures around the perimeter of the group. Careful placement of figures will let you use even those whose paint isn't up to the standards of your most successful examples. If you want to improve your figure painting, make a point of attending a National Model Railroad Association national, regional, or divisional meet, or any other model railroad event, such as those offered by local hobby shops, where they have a figure painting clinic. There, you can get the one-on-one assistance you need to improve your techniques. But in the meantime, you'll probably be able to use most or all of the figures you've painted. Inset to the article is Paints, Brushes, and Tools. Most model paints are suitable for coloring figures. I typically use Tamiya acrylics, but other brands will work. I like to use regular and super fine micro brush applicators when painting figures. I supplement the disposable applicators with size 0 and 1 detailed brushes and a budget-friendly spotting brush. You can find these brushes at well-stocked hobby shops and art supply stores. Detailed brushes range from moderately priced to very expensive, and high-priced brushes aren't necessary for painting figures. A good quality sable detail brush will get the job done. Detail brushes have shorter bristles to permit greater control. They're sold for use with watercolors, but are compatible with model paints. Clean your brushes right after you finish painting, as solidified paint in the bristles will ruin them. Even if you have excellent vision, I recommend using a magnifier, especially with smaller scales. In addition, be sure you have good lighting where you do your painting. V.S. or Victor Roseman of Brooklyn, New York, was a frequent contributor to Model Railroader. He passed away in January 2024. The next article is Turning Back Time on the W&LE. This 27 by 44 foot HO scale model railroad changed from 2007 to 1957. By Jim Talbot Sr., photos by Craig Wilson. On a humid, sultry late August morning in 1957, the communities of Steubenville and Mingo, Ohio, are about to be greeted by a familiar and comforting sound at 6 a.m. The high, shrieking, and piercing klaxon siren wailing at Wheeling Pit Steel. Blast furnace number 5 is, quote-unquote, tapping. It's the sound of prosperity and times are good. The steel mills of the Ohio River Valley employ thousands of locals, many of whom are the latest generation of their family to be employed in this vibrant industry. Times are good for the railroads, too. The rails of the Wheeling and Lake Erie, parentheses, Nickel Plate Road since 1949, close parentheses, are polished from numerous trains bringing tons of raw materials to and finished products from these industrial giants. A desire to replicate these exciting days beckoned me to backdate my HO scale W&LE Ohio River Division from 2007, featured in Great Model Railroads 2015, to 1957. This also allowed me to model the final summer of steam. To be exact, the simultaneous delivery of a group of Alco DL702, parentheses RSD12, close parentheses, and Electromotive Division SD9 road units cleared the air over the valley of Short Creek once and for all. The full-size W&LE. The Wheeling and Lake Erie Railroad, later Railway, traces its beginning back to the early 1870s. Nicknamed the Iron Cross, it was incorporated on March 10, 1871. The W&LE was constructed to gain access to the vast deposits of rich bituminous coal located in the famed Pittsburgh No. 8 coal district of southeast Ohio, and then to transport it north from Wheeling, West Virginia, to ports on the Great Lakes. The original 160-mile route was surveyed between Wheeling and Sandusky, Ohio, located on Lake Erie, approximately halfway between Toledo and Cleveland. The thrust of this article isn't about the most interesting nuances that make up the Wheeling's storied past, but suffice it to say that intriguing circumstances and illustrious or notorious characters, Jay Gould, being but one example, are all interwoven into making the W and LE a colorful and exciting railroad worthy of one's further study. I would personally recommend John B. Korn's two-volume work, The W and LE Railway, as a great read. The W and LE traffic base was evenly balanced with a mix of general merchandise, steel, and various minerals such as coal, coke, limestone, and iron ore. Steel traffic was shuttled between the mill districts in Cleveland, Canton, Mingo Junction, and Wheeling. For example, inbound shipments of iron ore and limestone were received from docks at Huron and Cleveland for movement to Republic Steel and Wheeling Pit Steel in various locations. Finished products were moved from these mills to multiple sites on the W&LE system. Coal in immense quantities was mined and transported from the Wheeling and Edina coal districts northward to mills, power plants, and docks all over the Great Lakes region. It's no surprise that Nickel Plate Road merged the Wheeling and Lake Erie into its system on December 1, 1949. The railroad continued its profitable ways, leading to the inclusion of the NKP into the Norfolk and Western on October 16, 1964. This introduced another chapter into the history of this proud and productive railroad, which continues to this day. However, I have chosen to concentrate on a small portion of the W&LE, focusing on 1957 in southeastern Ohio. A representational model. My circa 1957 W&LE Ohio River Division is modeled in the same roughly 600 square foot space as the circa 2007 version. Similar to the previous iteration of the layout, Brewster, Ohio represents the west end and Mingo Junction, Ohio depicts the east end. The river branch splits off from the main line at Pittsburgh Junction, Ohio and leads to staging that represents Terminal Junction and Wheeling, Edina Coal District, and points east. I consider the layout representational because I made no attempt to model the track arrangements exactly. The town names are prototypical and in the correct order. Even though I turned the clock back 50 years, the emphasis is still on industrial railroading. The Wheeling Pit Steel Company, a totally integrated steel operation, still occupies a 3x16-foot area. Though compact in size and design, the industry provides plenty of operation. A clean slate. In March 2009, I dismantled my previous model railroad to begin building my circa 2007 W&LE layout. This gave me a chance to make some major upgrades to the layout space, including additional electrical outlets, aluminum trim coil backdrops, and indoor-outdoor carpet on the floor. As you can see in the track plan, the model railroad is located in three rooms, 7 by 11 feet, 12 by 18 feet, and 13 by 32 feet. The larger of the three has a drop ceiling with 20 can lights containing 65-watt light-emitting diodes, or LEDs. This arrangement spreads the light evenly over the layout. The lighting on the rest of the model railroad is a mix of 2 and 4 foot cool white fluorescent tubes installed behind a valance. I'm in the process of replacing those with LEDs. The backdrop is professional grade aluminum trim coil used for roof flashing. Editor's note, see Lance Mendheim's article, Aluminum Trim Coil Backdrops, in the June 2018 Model Railroader for more information. The material is sold in 2x50-foot rolls and comes painted white, which acted like a primer for the sky blue paint that I applied. Then I attached photo backdrops and commercial offerings from Scena King and Realistic Backdrops to the trim coil. The benchwork is a shelf-like design that lent itself well to open-frame construction utilizing a sandwich of quarter-inch Luon plywood and 2-inch-thick extruded foam insulation board. More than 15 years have passed since I constructed the benchwork, and I've had little or no appreciable problems with expansion and contraction. To give the model railroad a museum-like appearance, and to keep operators and visitors focused on the layout, I painted the valance and fascia black and attached black skirting to the bottom of the fascia. Thank you for joining us for the Model Railroader magazine, read by Jason Consul.
You've been listening to the Model Railroader, brought to you by Trains.com. That's TRANES.com, in collaboration with AfterSight. If you've enjoyed this episode, we invite you to visit our website at AfterSight.org for more audio editions and original podcasts. For additional inquiries or to contact us, call us at 303-786-7777 or email contact@AfterSight.org. Thank you for listening.